We have a very special episode today. Here come the Americans. And I'm not talking about the TV series. We are joined by the two US colleagues, Daniel and Michael, that are talking about the energy American style a little bit. They're giving us their insights and predictions on what we can expect in the future.
Freight Up!
Hello and welcome back to Freight Up. My name is Davide and I will be your host as we navigate the seas of freight and commodities. Today we have a very special episode for you, with a focus on the US energy sector with two new guests that you haven't heard before, Daniel Kem and Miguel Andujar. Daniel is our Senior Development Executive in the US, while Miguel is our fuel oil broker and is also based in the United States. Fernanda cannot be with us this week, but we shall still sail on with this week's episode. But first, let's start with our usual roundup of the latest commodity and macro news. China's industrial production expanded by 7% year-on-year in January-February 2024 combined, and this was faster than a 6.8% growth in December 2023. The data surpassed market forecast of 5%, and this was the fastest expansion in industrial output in almost 2 years. The Bank of Japan raised its key short-term interest rate to around 0% to 0.1% from minus 0.1%, matching the market expectations and ending 8 years of negative interest rates. This is the first interest rate hike since 2007. Brent crude prices hit a four-month high above $85, with the IEA predicting a market deficit due to OPEC plus voluntary cuts. The EU is looking to levy tariff on grain imports from Russia and Belarus, amounting to a 95 euro per ton duty on cereals from the countries. The dry freight FFA market renewed its volatile zeal last week. Some serious Cape FFA movement on Wednesday, with an intraday March contract range of 33,750 to 35,500 before an afternoon sell down. As has been the case this year with the FFA market, the movements on the smaller ships were less volatile, but we still saw some good news on the prompt contracts. The Panamax 5TC April contract was at $19,300 last Tuesday to almost $22,000 on Monday. The April Supramax contract moving from $15,125 last Tuesday to $16,175 on Monday this week. Index-wise, they printed 33,093 on the C5TC, 20,757 on the P5TC, 14,861 on the S10TC, and 14,176 on the Handy 7TC. Marginally up on both the Supra and the Handy index, a good 18% increase on the Panamaxes, but 4 week on week on the C5TC of 2.5%. On the iron ore front, the 62% index slid again week on week and went down 2.2%, hovering precariously above the psychological $100 threshold at $107.90. Fuel oil contracts are both up. The high sulfur fuel oil Sing 380 up 5.5% to $475.48, and the very low sulfur single 5% index is up 3.2%, $631.58. Daniel, Miguel, thank you very, very much for joining us today for this US energy special episode. So there's a lot that has been going on in the US energy space and has been going on for the last couple of years. So just to remember some of the main points has been the Inflation Reduction Act, which had some huge subsidies for the US companies in the green energy and also like in the critical mineral production and processing. The growth of Tesla, the new political schism between the left and the right on this issue. It will be really great to hear your views on the effect on the trajectory of the US energy market.
The energy market is going through an interesting, let's say, moment, to put it this way. We have on one side, as EV cars, especially with Tesla, are growing in the US market. But then on the side, we see US oil production, as we see in the news, increasing as well. Last year, record level in history at 12.9 million barrels per day. The tricky part about this is that even though we seem that we're going clean in one way, when you look at the U.S. electric grid, 60% is still fossil fuels, so with like 20% coal or the estimate. So we're looking like with a version from fossil fuels, but we're using on the back end an electric grid as well. So we have to be careful with that. And that's what we're looking at it. And we also might be looking at an instance scenario where Asia might be looking more export, more imports or exports from the United States to Asia as well. So that might be related to the oil production as we have in development interesting new routes with the geopolitical conflicts in the Red Sea and the issues in the Panama Canal as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Miguel. You know, the war in Ukraine is what, 2 years in? That was a massive supply shock for the market. You know, you have countries that used to produce a vast amount of oil like Venezuela that is literally off the market and people are trying to re-engage there. So the United States basically stepped in as almost, albeit a swing producer here. You have OPEC curtailing their production, holding fast to their cuts in 2024. The IEA is forecasting that there'll be a slight supply deficit by the end of the year. Oil inventories are, while not on their lows, are still below the five-year average. So, you know, there are some real underlying physical reasons why the energy markets continue to be supported. 2 days ago, you had a drone attack on a Russian refinery. That's going to create some supply issues for diesel and gasoline in Europe, I would imagine. And they're going to need to see some cargoes and some shipments probably from the U.S. or diverted from Asia or something like that, maybe. But it's an interesting setup for the summer driving season, which is going to basically kick off in another month, month and a half.
I'm glad that you brought up the OPEC cuts. And that's something I always, as you probably know as well, that I always take that with a grain of salt. Because historically speaking, when we look at OPEC agreements, they struggle to put it in one way to meet their quotas or to fulfill the promises and their quotas, because they all have different agendas. They all have different policies, and starting from Russia and Saudi Arabia. So we have to look at, even though I'm personally bullish in the second quarter, end of this quarter, second quarter, but based on the OPEC cuts, I take it with a grain of salt based on their previous history of not fulfilling their promises.
Yeah, Miguel, Daniel, just to jump in 1 second, because like you have actually been potentially reading my mind, because there was actually one of the follow-up questions that I had, and is about specifically the OPEC plus cuts. So as you mentioned, like we've been following the news about the production cuts. Also very recently, Iraq has decided to join again, like, and cut the exports to 3.3 million barrels a day in the coming months. And then, as Daniel pointed out earlier, there we have the US that seems to be raising the supply. And then we have the latest news from the US Energy Information Administration that raised the outlook by 260,000 barrels per day to 13.19 million barrels. So my question is connected a little bit to what you said before. Like, do you think that these increase in supply will contribute to offset the effects that are coming from the OPEC plus production cut?
No, I mean, first and foremost, look, we're all old oil guys. When it comes to OPEC, you buy the rumor, you sell the fact, right? That was the old adage in the markets. You have a lot of countries, a lot of economies in the countries in the Middle East that have become very dependent upon a price point for oil that is quite high. And they're doing everything they can to keep it above $75 a barrel area. And, you know, the Saudis need, for their economy, I read some of the Saudis needed plus $80 crude oil, you know, to balance their budget on their expenditures for the year. So I do think that there are going to be supply shocks and disruptions, which is why I think it's really important for our clients to be speaking to our brokers and to be talking to them on a daily or at least weekly basis to hear what our brokers are seeing and what they're seeing going on in the marketplace. Because I think there is a definite correlation going on with the price of energy and inflation. You are seeing a persistently high energy price, and the cost of what it's doing to goods and services are just getting passed through the economy to the consumer. It's creating a ticklish situation for central banks, because central banks want to cut rates again and stimulate the economy and do things like this. But if oil prices stay high and energy prices in particular stay high, you're going to have inflationary pressures that might not allow these central banks to do that. You have Wall Street in the marketplace right now talking about, you know, the Fed is meeting right now. So the market expects the Fed to come out of the meeting after 2 p.m. on Wednesday and say that they're going to leave rates unchanged. And they expect that in the next meeting. But they're expecting after that rate cuts to come in. And if you get persistently high energy prices and that translates into high inflationary numbers, I don't think you're going to see that.
And to Dan's point, in retro perspective, when you look in context, I think that the key component here for the OPEC going to be the Saudis. And on like 2014, which was a different purpose, they were pursuing market share. As Dan was pointing out, right now they're looking for a point price, a price above 80s, based on the commitments they have made for public policy, balancing their budget. So they're looking on a particular price more than market share. So it's at a different context than 2014 when they pretty much flood the market to take U.S. shale production out of the market. So that's a very good point as well. And to Dan's point as well, when you look at increases in energy prices, which is one of the main factors for inflation, you look at the last data for the United States, as inflation data went up, consumption decreased, which is equivalent to like 2/3 of the GDP of the U.S. So that's something to take into consideration as well.
And following back on debt, actually, if you will allow me, I'd like to move on one of my personal favorite topics, which is monetary policy, because of my previous work experiences. So like we've mentioned earlier that like Japan has finally changed its monetary policy stance after 8 years of negative interest rates. In the US, as Dan said, like we're waiting for the Fed, but like we should also remember that like the inflation figures have been higher than the consensus both for January and February. As you mentioned, like energy prices are one of the things that like are closely looked by the central banks and they contribute to shape the monetary policy stance. So I would like to look together with you like maybe a little bit of the correlation, the relation between these two factors and how do they really influence each other. So Miguel, maybe we can start with you also because you recently wrote an article on that specific topic, didn't you?
Yeah, in terms of the monetary policy, especially the Federal Reserve, because we all buy and sell in dollars all around the globe. In my recent article, I was making an emphasis that for the last year, I believe it's from July. It was from July of 2022 until July of 2023. We experienced one of the most aggressive tightening policies from the Federal Reserve in the last 40 years. And went from 0.25 to 5.25, which we know we're an economy, a financialization economy. Everything is based on borrowing. So that increased the cost of borrowing, but also is trying to pursue the strength of the U.S. dollar, trying to fight inflation. But going back to what Dan said, inflation has a lot to do with the energy in these days. Now, on the flip side of that, as you strengthen the dollar, if you buy and sell in dollars, the stronger the dollar is, the less dollars you're going to need to buy your crude oil. And so it's a very strong correlation when you look through history of the U.S. dollar strength and the crude oil prices for Brent, for Europe, and also for the WTI in the United States. When you look at the last 180 days, 200 days, you have a correlation around the 75%, which is pretty strong. So even though the sentiment has changed, we're expecting that for this meeting, the Federal Reserve was supposed to start cutting interest rates. Based on the last data that we mentioned before, with the inflation still persists, it seems like the consensus now has changed that they're not cutting rates. Some market, the expectations for the markets is that they're going to stay put. But I think that's just one of the scenarios for the oil prices. I still believe that they're still going to go up based on other reasons, such as supply and demand. And as Dan was saying as well, with the cuts with OPEC and the United States trying to cut, like to balance out that cut from the OPEC. And it would be interesting what Japan does today as well, because it might create a domino effect on the Asian currencies as well.
So like we've mentioned the OPEC cuts, we've mentioned monetary policy. I'd like to bring on the third guest, so to say, to our table, which will be the geopolitical tensions. And as everybody is aware, there's some ongoing geopolitical tensions in the Red Sea. They're pushing, in general, like the shipping companies to actually reconsider the current routes. On one end, if you're opting for a safer but longer route, which is not going through the Gulf of Aden, where you're going to have potential Houthi attacks, on the other side, the route is going to be longer and then therefore it's going to cost you more. What are the effects of this decision on the prices in the medium and long term?
First of all, you know, with over 28 years of experience in the oil markets, I was kind of impressed at how well the market absorbed the initial shocks of the Houthi rebel attacking shipping and whatnot. I mean, prices got firmer, but prices didn't really explode to the upside either. And it's a situation that unfortunately is not going to go away, at least until the Israeli offensive into the rest of Gaza is completed. And even then, I'm sure it probably will stick around. So I think it's just something the market's going to have to deal with, or the more correctly, the navies of certain countries are going to have to deal with. But, you know, you also have the Russian situation. Both sides are firmly entrenched in their beliefs and their militia. And that's a situation that's not going away either. So I would have to think that the geopolitical shocks are going to be something that the market is just going to have to deal with on a daily or weekly or monthly basis. They don't seem to be situations that are going away.
I'm actually surprised by the resilience of the bunker industry adapting to new routes, which this implies that you're going to, when you look at the map, you see that in order to make fulfill your orders, you have to do to be on the safe side, to use alternative routes, and which imply in sometimes 2 weeks, even 20 plus days, which eventually will show up on the increase in consumption of bunker fuels, marine gas, oil as well. It's an interesting route that is developing as we speak, which it combined two things, two elements. What we spoke before about OPEC cuts and also the alternative routes, which is going to eventually push Asia markets to look more for oil consumption, similar to what happened with natural gas in the United States and Europe. But mainly on the, I would say, the West Coast, which is a shorter route, but also on the Gulf Coast as well. But overall, I am actually surprised, as Dan said, that we'll be able to absorb the shock for this long. In other circumstances, I think would be much, much worse in terms of price spikes, if you ask me.
If you could express in just like 1 minute your main thoughts, your main predictions for this year for the oil market, what do you think it's going to be? Daniel, maybe we can start with you.
I would think prices stay supported. There's all the reasons that we just spoke about, you know, the tightness in supply, the low oil inventories across the board. I mean, diesel and gasoline also. But I would think that we're in late March, entering into driving season. I would really look at TI to trade in a band, barring any kind of black swan event, between 75 to 77 and 85. And then if supplies continue to tighten in the second half of the year, I would think you would have to raise that band to an $80 to $90 price range. And that also doesn't take into effect that those little black swan events that come across every once in a while. I would look for that kind of pricing structure going forward.
Miguel?
One of my roles was state analysis back in the day, and I always say numbers don't lie. Besides the OPEC and besides the United States production, I think what is my main concern has been inventory, commercial inventory in the United States and global inventory. As Dan was saying, we head into driving season and you look at how much inventory we have. It seems like it's a healthy inventory, but it's 5% under the season average. And we increase in consumption by 1.7 based on the last revision from the International Energy Agency. And you look at the derivatives like diesel, is 7% under the 5-season average. So for me, that's more of a concern than anything as we get into driving season. And as we all know, Americans won't stop driving. And I think that the world won't stop moving either. So my concern is that, and that's why I remain bullish for the remainder of the year. And I look at from technical analysis perspective, as we spend like 3 months in a tight range, we're out of that range, and now we seems like we're going to get for the Brent on the 90s before the end of this first quarter and maybe the 85 area for the WTI.
Thank you very much, Miguel. And thank you very much, Daniel. I mean, we could still sit here for like another hour or two, but like, I think that like the podcast episode will be probably too long, but we should do it again. And thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for this week. Make sure to subscribe by clicking on the subscribe button on wherever you get your podcast from. And make sure to follow us on LinkedIn or get signed to our app FIS Live to make sure that you never miss any freight and commodity analysis from Freight Investor Services. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you again on the next episode of Freight Up.